Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversations podcast, recorded live at the Seattle Chamber Music Society's 2019 Summer Festival. I'm Dave Beck. I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and at king.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us wherever you listen and enjoy this latest classical conversation. Violinist Erin Keefe was one of the artists at the 2019 SCMS Summer Festival. She's the concertmaster of the Minnesota Orchestra and has been coming to play chamber music in Seattle since 2005. This world-class violinist says shockingly that she detests practicing. But Erin explains that the social aspect of music and the friendships and collegiality of chamber music in particular fuel her passion for perfecting her craft. Listening to Seattle Chamber Music Society artists playing together there leads me to circle back to your very first introduction to the Seattle Chamber Music Society. When did you begin playing here?
I believe my first summer was 2005, actually. Wow. It was my first professional summer engagement. And I remember, actually, Toby had sent me an email one or two seasons before asking me to fill in at the last second. And I'd heard so much about this festival, and I was so sad to have to say no. I think I was going to Marlboro for 7 weeks, and you can't just leave. So I was so relieved when I got the email again asking me to come here. And I've been here every summer since then and several winters. And it is, without a doubt, my favorite summer festival to go to. I would not miss it.
I sometimes think I hear every artist that I interview here. I think are you being nice?
No, I mean, but I just said that on the radio. I mean it.
Yeah,
like I really mean it.
Tell me about what has compelled you so to come back.
Well, I think the when I came here at the beginning, it was when Toby was still running the festival, and we used to hang out at her house from maybe 9 in the morning until midnight with all of the artists, and we had meals together and rehearsed, and it just felt very much like a family. And the artists who she chose were not just great musicians, they were also great people, and people you wanted to be friends with and hang out with and talk to throughout the year. And then, of course, James has taken over, and it's still very much the same. It does feel very familiar, and it's so nice to return to play with these artists year after year. It has a very special feeling, which you don't find at all music festivals. Yeah.
She was such a great talent scout. Mm-hmm. I mean, James being here is a testament to that. And you, how did she find out about you? Or?
I believe the first person she heard about me from was Toby Apple. I think he recommended me. And then I had played with several of the artists here at various other festivals, or like when I was a student and they were coaching. And so I was just starting to have more of a chamber music focus. I had finished grad school, and I was joining the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, actually. So I think she took a lot of chances, and a lot of them worked out really well. Some didn't, but she was not shy to hire younger artists who she had some faith in. Mm-hmm. So,
And taking you even farther back, how did the violin become the instrument of your choice?
Violin. Okay, well, I'm an only child. My dad was an English lit professor. My mom was director of HR at Smith College. So music was not part of their lives. My dad loved the violin. He loved jazz. So at first, when I was 5, they said, well, you're gonna play the piano. We're going to buy an instrument. You're going to take lessons with the lady down the street. And so they bought a piano. We had an old house. It didn't fit through the front door. The front door is too small. So they figured, well, you can just practice at the college and still take lessons. And the day before my first lesson, the lady down the street had a stroke. She's still alive to this day. I mean, we're talking like 30-something years later. So it wasn't a very bad stroke. But my mom and dad took that as a sign that piano is not going to be your instrument. So, which actually is quite lucky, because if you look at my hands, there's no way. I can barely play an octave on the piano. So then they chose the violin, and I started in the group class at my elementary school. And after about 6 months, the teacher said, well, she doesn't really have any musical ability to speak of. I don't know. So I quit for 2 years. I don't know. It was like the weirdest thing. And then my dad still had dreams of me playing music, and so I started again with a local teacher privately, and then one thing led to another. So it's kind of amazing that I am a musician after all of that.
Well, and it just sort of shocked me when I'm reading some articles about you that, you know, and here you are, you know, with Lincoln Center and Seattle Chamber Music Society and Minnesota Orchestra Concertmaster. You didn't like to practice.
No, I still hate to practice, to be honest, though. I detest practicing. I do it as little as I can, but I'm quite efficient. I've learned to be very efficient at it and to set goals for myself, because otherwise it would be quite difficult. Yeah.
So the thing that seemed to save you was chamber music,
because
it was the social aspect of playing, you said.
I think I was quite lucky to be involved in a Suzuki program at the University of Hartford, and they had actually an orchestra program and a chamber music program. So I started playing in orchestra when I was 8, in a little string orchestra. I mean, we played songs that were like half a page long. And then I was also in a quartet when I was 8, a 4-violin quartet, for a couple of years, which of course then turned into string quartet and string trios, and Saturday was my favorite day of the week, because that's when I would get to go to the community division at Hart and see all my friends and get to play with them. So I've always been attracted to the social aspect of playing, obviously more than the sitting in a room by yourself, sort of woodshedding for hours at a time. But yeah, chamber music was the reason I became a musician.
Yeah. I think the more I'm around musicians, I feel like there is the, even in my own family, my younger daughter was all about playing with other people, and the older one was, you know, would lock herself into the practice room. So I just, there's something really powerful about that social aspect.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a great part of music making, and I think, you know, chamber music is the foundation of everything. In orchestra playing, I totally use my chamber music skills. I'm not just staring at the baton of the conductor, and as a soloist, when you play concertos, you have one rehearsal, two rehearsals, so if you're not using your ears and your ensemble skills, then it's not going to go very well. So
I remember when Ludovic Morlot got called on to conduct the Berlin Philharmonic, and you know, I interviewed him when he came. What was it like, Ludo? And he goes, it was like playing chamber music with 100 people. Mm-hmm. I mean, with a great orchestra like that, that's that kind of listening and interaction.
Yeah, that's the goal, I think. Yeah. That's what every ensemble would love to be.
Yeah. You've chosen some of Beethoven's chamber music to help us tell your story a little bit more. This is the Late String Quartet, Opus 131. Why is this music so important to you?
Okay, so when I went to the Hart School, I was fortunate enough to be there at a time when the Emerson String Quartet was in residence. And I remember my Suzuki teacher telling me that I really needed to get to know Phil Setzer, one of the violinists of the quartet, and to take some lessons with him. So she made me sit outside of his office for like an hour waiting for his lesson to be over. And I remember being incredibly nervous. I think I was about 15. And he turned out to be the most gracious man I may have ever met, actually. And I remember thinking it was really interesting, his email address, which I will not say on air, but it includes the numbers 131. And I was like, well, what's that about? He said, well, my favorite piece of, maybe he said music or chamber music, is Opus 131. And so I started listening to it and quickly became definitely my favorite piece of chamber music. And I had the good fortune of playing it only once, actually. It's hard to play quartets when you get more established unless you're in an actual string quartet.
Right. But especially quartets like that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's a beast of a piece. And so I played it at a festival that I was subbing at maybe 10 years ago. We had 3 rehearsals, which for a piece like this is insane. I mean, a professional quartet would spend a month on this piece, but performing it was incredibly moving. It's again, it's sort of like a Mahler symphony in a way. It, like, all the emotions are there, and it is exhausting to play, but I hope it's something that I can perform again in the future, because it's so meaningful and it's so powerful. Mm-hmm. So I would love to get the chance. So I chose this as one of the recordings with the Emerson Quartet playing it, with Phil Setzer playing. So I hope you enjoy.
Very good. Let's listen to the, it's the fourth movement, a little bit from the fourth movement.
Thank you.
they are always stunning to hear play Beethoven.
Oh, absolutely.
Emerson, yeah. What else comes to mind when you listen to that in terms of the piece or what Phil Setzer kind of left you with as a teacher?
That's a good question. Well, the part we just heard is such, in a way, a simplistic part of the piece and sunny part of the piece, but there's such darkness also throughout it. But I think that the interesting thing about studying with Phil is that he's so nice and he's so incredibly generous. I mean, he gave up a lot of time to teach students. Lily Francis used to be here as well at the festival, and she studied with him during high school as well. But he had this warmth, and I think you can hear that very much in his playing, in this recording, but all recordings. And so he just had this love of music. And for someone who has been doing it for as long as he has, he still has that sort of like infectious. And I'm so glad that he does teach on a regular basis, because I think that that's something that's really important for students to see. It's not just work, you know, you love what you do, and you know, he still loves playing all this music all the time, so.
Does teaching fit into your life?
It has throughout various parts of my life. At the moment, not as much, but I did have maybe 8 students a couple years ago, but because my husband travels so much for work, and I travel so much for work, I felt like this is not the time to have consistent students. It's not fair to them. I think that the students need you there every week. But I did have one student who I taught for 2 years, who's now at Juilliard, but she was taking a gap year, so I could see her whenever I wanted to see her in between. And I do love teaching. I think it's really important. It also makes you a better player because, you know all these things that your teachers told you and you know what to do. You don't necessarily always do them yourself. So when you have to demonstrate and tell someone else about these things, it's a good reminder.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, in the future, I would love to do more teaching.
Yeah, I to kind of go back to that Beethoven quartet and just what you were saying about Beethoven and Mahler, this movement of the quartet, I didn't write down, but it has this very complicated, set of instructions as to tempo and character and all that. Very, very much in style of Mahler, who
meticulous.
You have to have your German dictionary handy. And what you said there, it starts out in such a simple way, but the complexity that unfolds over the, and it's like 15-minute movement.
Yeah, it
too.
Is. It's quite substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like I said, but Beethoven, this sort of movement, it sounds so simple at the beginning of it, and then he just adds these layers of complexity and the ensemble playing. I mean, they make it sound so easy. If you heard a lot of other quartets like rehearsing this, you'd be surprised at how difficult. Actually, our open rehearsal after this, we're doing a Mendelssohn quartet, and to learn that in 1 or 2 days is quite tricky. So you have to have these great chamber music skills to be able to do that.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversations podcast. This podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. The show is produced by Nikhil Sarma and co-produced by Daisha Clay. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusic.org or to king.org. Rate and review our podcast when you listen. And thanks for joining this latest Classical Conversations.